everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, continuing with our conversations with remarkable minds, the topic, geoengineering, heading towards a planetary catastrophe in the years ahead, and its unpredictable backlash contributing to global warming. My guest, Dane Wigington. Dane is a geoengineer, a scientist with a background in solar energy, who is highly regarded as one of the foremost experts and commentators on the stratospheric aerosol geoengineering and solar radiation management. He is a former employee at Bechtel Power Corporation and worked on the first commercial solar plants in the United States. As a climate researcher, Dane has been studying the issue of geoengineering and chemtrails for over a decade. He has appeared in numerous documentary films and public appearances, educating the public about the adverse effects of weather modification, and is featured in Michael Murphy's documentary, Why in the World Are They Spraying? He also hosts and is lead researcher for the iWebsite geoengineeringwatch.org. He lives on his wildlife preserve near Lake Shasta in Northern California. And it was through his observations in the change of the forest and atmosphere and biodiversity and health of the land that alerted him to the implications of excessive geoengineering operations in his regions. Nice to have you with us today, Dane.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for your attention to this issue that people are finally starting to wake up to.
Unfortunately, policymakers and opinion leaders are still not awake to this. I checked today to see how many individuals were writing on this topic in the mainstream media, and it's virtually no one. In fact, when they have written about it, they've always put it into the negative or pejorative context, meaning this must be one of these alien observers or some form of idealistic lollipops, people who simply can't connect with real life, and so they go off on these conspiracy theorists. Very negative, the comments they've made. However, what you're here to do for this hour is to discuss in detail, scientific detail, geoengineering, and since there is a lot of developments, a lot of new research and findings, not just by American investigators such as yourself, but by foreign research scientists as well. And we're also starting to witness serious and unpredictable consequences of blanketing the atmosphere with a hazy fog of toxic chemicals to obscure the sun's solar rays in order to lessen the heating of the atmosphere and Earth. And now there is good science emerging in the scientific literature that indicates that rather than cooling the planet, geoengineering and weather modification is backfiring and advancing and increasing global warming. And I want us to eventually discuss some of these topics in greater depth. But to begin, I want you to go into like a primer for people who have never heard of this before, don't know what we're talking about. So we get the basic fundamentals to the listeners out of the way. It's about weather modification, and the problem as I see it is that it's not a single problem. It is systemic as an issue with a wide range of complexities that interrelate and are causing serious threats to life on Earth in numerous ways, and probably many we haven't even yet imagined. So please go into the principle of global dimming, that's what it's called, dimming, through the use of metals and chemicals to encase the atmosphere for the purpose of limiting the amount of light and heat from the sun that reaches the Earth's surface. And what are these chemicals and why are they being the primary particulates for creating global dimming? And from the vantage point of the government, the military, and the corporations responsible for geoengineering, what was their basic theory they were banking on to lessen or slow down global warming? The forum is yours.
Well, thank you for covering those bases, Gary. You're certainly very versed in this issue yourself. I know you've kept your eye on this. If I can go back to the on people waking up, the reason for the mainstream media pushback is because larger and larger segments of the population are waking up to this issue. So as you correctly stated, the pushback is becoming stronger and more profound. Gary, did you by chance see the disinformation article that was issued about a week and a half ago by Ken Caldera and the Carnegie Science Foundation?
Yes.
So let me use that as a case in point if I can, and then I'll get into the rest of your questions. So we had, shortly after our U.S. legal team, the Legal Alliance to Stop Geoengineering, issued a 60-day notice of pending legal action with 30-plus defendants, as many government posts, agencies in California, and so forth. Shortly after that, we see this article produced by geoengineer Ken Caldera, David Keith, and the Carnegie Science Foundation. It was about as shoddy of a, quote, study as you could find. It was really only a survey, and this is how desperate they seem to be to marginalize this issue. They falsely disclosed the amount of scientists that were involved with this. There was 450 solicited, of which only 16% were willing to even respond, and that 16% was counted as 100% of those solicited in the way that they laid out the study. So it appeared as if the vast majority of these scientists, 76 of 77 that responded out of 450, stated there were no such thing as chemtrails. Now, they weren't asked, was there solar radiation management? Was there stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, stratospheric aerosol injection? They weren't asked about the science terms. Trying to point out to your listeners that when they see a headline that claims, quote, chemtrails, which is not a science term, and we stay away from that term, is not happening, they need to look deeper. They need to look below the surface. And so here we have a study in which 84% of the scientists solicited refused to even participate, and that was really not stated. So we need to look past the disinformation. As far as the point and purpose, you laid that out very clearly. The stated intent for solar radiation management to block some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation. Obviously, a massive list of downstream consequences from that, and we are indeed seeing an unbelievable manifestation of those consequences. And the complexities, which you correctly alluded to, of the Earth's life support systems, the climate system, so unimaginably complex, still not understood, and to throw a wrench into that system, as we have with climate engineering, can only produce a highly negative result. And it's helping to trigger and fuel feedback loops, Gary, and I know you know what those are with the climate. And we have now, it appears, 50 to 60 feedback loops that are fueling the planet toward a runaway greenhouse effect. And with climate engineering, although it's for your listeners, although it can and does lower daytime high temperatures in specific regions because the sun is being blocked to an unimaginably high degree, you mentioned global dimming, a term many are unfamiliar with, and the statistical level of global dimming right now is somewhere between 20 and 30%, depending on the study and depending on where in the globe we're talking about. So 20 to 30% of the sun's direct rays are no longer reaching the planet, but that same layer of reflective particles is also trapping thermal radiation, shredding the ozone layer, disrupting the hydrological cycle, and poisoning the entire planet virtually. So we're looking at the pharmaceutical cure for planet Earth that has so far pushed us towards past the point of no return toward the planet that we've already known. And this is on top of all the damage the human race has done to the planet from other sources. So the reason, again, I've devoted the last 12 to 15 years of my life to this issue is because, quite simply, if you look at it mathematically, Gary, it's the greatest single assault ever launched against the planet. It's the greatest and most immediate threat we face short of nuclear cataclysm.
Now we know that there are many highly toxic chemicals that are being sprayed daily around the world, including aluminum and barium and sulfides and manganese. Those are the primary ones. What I don't understand is the use of radioactive chemicals such as thorium and radioactive cesium. Now, we're essentially altering the weather in the most unnatural ways because none of these substances are found in high particulate quantities in the atmosphere, yet nevertheless fall out to the earth because it rains, there's snow, there's fog, and other forms of precipitation. And when these heavy particulate matters then trap in these lighter matters, they all fall to the ground. It falls on your lawn, falls in a tree, stays in the air, goes in the ocean, the waters. Why these other toxic chemicals are put in there, we have not been told. And we can also include lead. We can include even the, one of the worst are some of these endocrine-destroying chemicals that have been banned in Europe but still legal in the United States. And those are going onto pastures, and then the cattle are eating the pastures, just coming through in their milk. And for years, we were told not true. We were told that mercury never leaked from your amalgam fillings, and yet 52% of a silver filling is actually mercury. And then we found out through Hal Huggins that they simply weren't using devices sophisticated enough to detect the mercury, and indeed upwards of 24 micrograms of mercury were leached out in an average day, depending upon how much chewing of food and the temperatures of food, and that was causing mercury getting in the brain. So once we had the technology to measure the reality, we saw why some people were having symptoms that when you got rid of mercury in the mouth, like the fillings, they began to improve. Similarly, we were told that smoking wasn't harmful for 100 years. The official version was smoking's not harmful. The cancer institutes, the National Cancer Institute, and all the other government agencies, it's not harmful. Indeed, it was. And we estimate a minimum of 10 million Americans died because of that ignorance, but it was not unintentional. We were told asbestos was not harmful. It was. We were told Agent Orange was not harmful. It was. So when you look at the legacy of toxic chemicals that end up on our air, our water, or our food, and the devastating effect it's had, now we're told, don't worry, none of these chemicals going into the atmosphere are going to be harmful. They're too small. You mean small enough, like the ones that are ending up in our water supply from medicines people take, like chemotherapy and AZT and other drugs? They're ending up in our water. So everything we've been told has been either half-truths or full lies. So go into this in some detail of why are they using radioactive chemicals. And also, can you estimate approximately how much of these chemicals are sprayed throughout the atmosphere over our heads every day?
Well, to first, to back into the questions, as far as the radioactive elements, at this point, it's difficult for us to have any way to determine what the source is of some of these elements, because we have Fukushima going on, we have leaks from other nuclear facilities around the globe. So, and we do have two studies that have been approved and then rescinded once they began to get too much attention about coal fly ash being used as a base material. The chemical signature matches. It would make sense that they would use such a material because it contains elements that are also useful for ocean iron fertilization, another form of geoengineering, a way to force the ocean to uptake CO2, to force it to uptake CO2. Huge detrimental effects with that as well. But again, the powers that be don't worry about the consequences. So there's radioactive materials that would be associated with that as well. But we don't have any way to determine what is coming from where. In regard to the aluminum, so your listeners understand why aluminum being such a primary element named in climate engineering patents, because aluminum has an extremely high albedo, a reflectivity, has a low coagulation rate, the particles don't stick together, and it was named by the world's most recognized geoengineers like Dr. David Keith from Harvard, as being a prime material for climate engineering, as long as you don't care about the consequences. So to tie that into the amount of aluminum, for example, that Dr. Keith called for, this is on film and on the record. If your listeners searched, I was the particular one that was at the international conference that asked him this question. We got on film. If they search David Keith, Dane Wigington, they can watch a five-minute video of Dr. Keith truly making astounding, alarming statements that their goal was to put 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere annually. 20 million tons. If we break that down on a daily basis, depending on the payload with a military tanker, for example, that could be 600 to 1,000 flights per day with payloads in the 40 to 60 ton range of nanoparticulates. And as you correctly stated, agencies would try to have us believe that these incredibly microscopic nanoparticulates are so small they don't do any harm. In fact, the exact opposite is true. The smaller the particle, the more harmful it is. So we know that these nanoparticulates, we have internationally recognized scientists like Dr. Russell Blaylock that have stated on the record, these particles go straight through the lung lining into the bloodstream, adhere to cell receptors like a plaque. You correctly outline the dangers of mercury from our fillings, and there's other sources of mercury. We certainly know they're in the vaccinations. We have synergistic toxicity between aluminum and mercury specifically. We have peer-reviewed study on that that states the combination of those two metals can increase overall toxicity by as much as 10,000%, 100 times worse. So yes, we're being lied to on every level. Gary, you mentioned on the bioavailable metals being uptaken in grass, for example, or feed for livestock, also completely on target. We work with a Norwegian researcher that worked on a study to measure the amount of aluminum being uptaken in their grass in which their bovine were feeding, and they calculated how much aluminum the cows were ingesting over the course of a year because of what the grass was now absorbing, somewhere over a half a kilo of aluminum in the cows. That's an incredible amount of aluminum. So with all the other toxins in the atmosphere, which you correctly outlined, from all the other sources, mathematically speaking, geoengineering and the amount of materials, toxic, highly toxic materials, chemicals, polymers, would exceed all the other sources combined. That's how the math looks right now. So this is truly a fight for life. And Gary, you've seen the studies, I would imagine, on the bees and aluminum. We now have peer-reviewed studies to show that the bees are packed full of aluminum. Have you seen those?
Yes.
That should be alarming to people, one would think. We have the same type of peer-reviewed study on whales. We have 1,000 whales from around the globe also with jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in their tissues, and it's in all of us as well. So I would argue at this point, no matter what else we face, and we face an unimaginable list of challenges, if we're inhaling this type of material with every breath, it's affecting our cognitive ability, our overall health, degrading the environment, shredding the ozone layer. I could go on and on. This is an immediate fight for life. We simply have to win this battle, Gary.
Dane, how long have they been doing this type of climate alteration? And for a long time, they simply denied it. When people said, I see these chemtrails, they said, no, that's just the exhaust from different types of aircraft and precipitate matter, but it's not filled with any metals. Then we managed to get for some whistleblowers to show photographs from inside the planes, and you actually see these special outfitted planes. And then you start realizing from some pilots, yeah, they fly these missions, and this is highly toxic material. There's very specific standards for how they're supposed to handle it, the people who are replacing the chemicals that have been sprayed. And then you ask, well, have there been any studies, even a single study, done to prove that these are not toxic to the environment or humans or animals? The answer is no. Yet, Dane, in October 1989, I published an article. It was one of about 48 cover stories for a major national magazine. And in this cover story, I showed that the United States government had been using its own citizens as human guinea pigs for decades, all without their knowledge or consent. In one case, they were using prisoners. In another case, using soldiers. And they would test something, and then they would see what impact it had. And these were short-term tests. For example, in one Chicago hospital, they were feeding radiation on toast to children to see what impact it would have on their kidneys. And if the kids did not manifest anything severe in a very short period of time, like a few days, then they stopped their observation. It took me over a year, but I was able to track down one of the doctors involved in the study down in Texas, and I asked him long ago, because this was the beginning of his career, you engaged in giving people experimental drugs that had no good purpose, and these were not followed up on. And he said, I'm sorry I did that, but as the beginning of my career, it was the military, and in the military, you have no choice. You cannot challenge command. And so he said, so for my career, I just went ahead and did it, and let it be. In another case, they injected live cancer cells at Sloan Kettering, as well as a hospital in Brooklyn. A person actually injected live cancer cells into pregnant women in their legs. There was no long-term follow-up. They wanted to see what would happen, how the body would respond to live cancer cells being injected. I wrote an article on that as well. Now, what this showed me was that we have a special, almost Dr. Strangelove mindset in the United States when you are a part of a bureaucracy. When you're at the CIA, the National Institutes of Health, the FDA, the National Cancer Institute, you feel as if somehow you're immune. No matter what you do, you're protected. That what you're doing supposedly serves some common good, but you never have to be that circumspect. And you never have to look at long-term consequences. So clear back then, I was talking about how millions of Americans have been exposed. Now, in that same article, I wrote about how they were spraying whooping cough over parts of Louisiana, and they had the highest spike in whooping cough in the state's history after that. They also had some special aerosol bacterium that they said was inert being released from a ship that was going up and down outside of San Francisco Harbor. Turns out it was not inert. Some patients at a hospital ended up being infected, and one died from that infection. There was a lawsuit by the son, who was an attorney, and he was able to find this material out. But the government said, you can't sue us. Well, technically you can if the government gives you permission to sue it, but the government wouldn't give permission and said this was all national security. So what I'm saying is the government has used its own citizens as human guinea pigs. The Tuskegee experiment is one example. African-American children with the MMR vaccine with a 324% increase in autism and those getting the MMR vaccine, and it was hidden and covered up by Dr. William Thompson, his colleague at CDC. That's recent. In fact, that was the basis of the movie Vax. So everywhere you look, in every department, there lies obfuscation. So with that as background, now tell us about all those airplanes and all that we were seeing coming out the exhaust, and now even black exhaust, black chemtrails, that they had been A, denying existed for decades, B, said it was conspiracy theorist that had no basis in reality and the media wouldn't touch it. Tell us about that history, please.
Well, first I would argue that, and I agree with everything you stated, we've all been a part of a grand and lethal experiment that supersedes even all the smaller experiments you described. The entire planet has been the subject of an experiment that started at a significant scale in the mid-1940s. That's when these programs were really ramped up. Now, the massive lie that's been fed to populations around the globe, the contrail lie, I would encourage your listeners to go to geoengineeringwatch.org, and on the right side of the homepage, scroll down, you'll see a jet engine animation circulating. Hit that link and you can get a tutorial on a high bypass turbofan jet engine. That jet engine is on all commercial carriers and all military tankers. It's a jet-powered fan designed for fuel efficiency. 85% of the air that passes through that engine is non-combusted, and it's nearly incapable of producing a condensation trail except under the most hostile of circumstances and unusual circumstances. So when we have film footage to confirm that data that I just expressed, we have film footage, numerous segments that show aircraft clearly turning on and off. You can't turn a condensation trail on and off. We have up-close photographs of the nozzles mounted on the pylons, retrofit nozzles feeding directly into the exhaust stream to make this look like, quote, condensation. Again, not asking your listeners to believe anything I say, but simply to investigate, because all this data is at geoengineeringwatch.org, and the public simply must activate its sense of reason and not its programming to and its propensity to believe the official narrative, whatever that narrative may be, however ridiculous that narrative may be. The public wants to believe that. They don't want to believe this is going on, but that kind of denial will not save us. Again, the climate engineering issue, because it affects every breath every one of us takes every single day, and we don't know what they're putting in this mix, quite frankly. So we're all a part of the type of testing that you just described. And what kind of doctors, Gary, what kind of people participate in this kind of thing because it's good for their career? And the media, and I would be curious, you described some of this, but I would be curious more of your take on what you see in the media right now, because what we see on this end, and I know people know how skewed the media is, but it's reaching new levels. And we just had a Northern California newspaper who completely blacked out the last two major events we did in Northern California. I mean, these are major events with, we just did one with Vaxxed and Climate Engineering, and we brought the whole Vaxxed team here. We had free viewings of the Vaxxed film in a major 1,000-plus seat auditorium, press releases. We had a full geoengineering presentation the year before with former government scientists, CEO for the largest environmental engineering consulting firm on the planet, former pilots, former military, total blackout by Northern California, ABC affiliate, KRCR, Record Searchlight newspaper. These are the main Northern California media. Total blackout. They refuse to cover any of these massive community events. And that's how blatant they're getting right now, Gary. So in comparison with the doctor you highlighted who just went along because that was his job, and we have the media doing the same thing, are they not, Gary, in both cases accessories to the crime?
Well, they're not if they do not know that they are committing a crime. So many people in the media spike a story, meaning they don't follow up on it, because they're told what they're going to be covering in a given news cycle. And there's a concept, if it bleeds, it leads. Good news is bad for listener viewership. Bad news is good. So they'll take on a topic as long as those in power can control the message. Now, you look at one time, we had over 1,100 different members of the media, from small to medium to large to gigantic. Today, we only have six. Six major media control 95% of all the information that we receive. Now, if you add in a few more movie theaters in there, or movie chains, you're still only at seven corporations. Now, between the films, television, the news cycles. But then you have this. I have footage from the Church Committee hearings back in the 1970s, where Representative Frank Church asked the head of the CIA, William Colby, do you have any agents or assets, what are called assets, which are people implanted or influencing major media? And the answer was yes, though he wouldn't talk about it in open session, but he did in closed session. And later, it was somewhere, I believe, over 1,100 individuals were impacting the media through the CIA. So if the CIA did not want a story to come out, or wanted a story slanted in a particular way, or wanted someone demonized, then that's what happened. Let's just give three examples that to show how simple it is. One is when we were told that Saddam Hussein, who was a tyrant, there's no question about that, but you have to separate out what he was as an individual and who kept him in power. It was the United States. And during that reign where he was in power, we gave him chemical and biological weapons. We gave him both the actual weapons, because I wrote a story on it and actually tracked his invoices, and that was through the Department of Agriculture. And then some of those biological and chemical weapons, as well as what the British government gave, he would use against Iran. Now, why did he use them against Iran? Because we were sponsoring Iraq in an eight-year war against Iran, where Iranians lost over 1 million of its citizens and caused devastation to his country. But Saddam Hussein was our terrorist. He was our tyrant. And yet in his country, you had a very secular society. You had Christianity and other religions accepted. He was from the Sunnis and the Ba'athist Party, and they controlled most things, yet the majority of people were Shia. And yet there was no massive poverty. And yet we said that he had weapons, and we lied. Now, who said, the government said that we had weapons of mass destruction, but who stepped up there to beat the drums of war? Judith Miller, the New York Times. And I have not seen her publicly apologize for the fact that more than 1.5 million Iraqis have died. More than 6 million became refugees in their own country, that over 500,000 children have been adversely affected, and under the Clintons, they died from sanctions, that radioactive isotopes are in the air from depleted uranium being in all the weapons, and that their whole infrastructure is completely and totally destroyed. Now look in Libya. We were told that Gaddafi was bombing his and killing his own citizens. It was not true. Who said it? It was the media. As a result, the number one nation in Africa and the Middle East. There was no nation in Africa or the Middle East that had more freedom for Muslim women than in Libya. In fact, it was part of the law. You could not assault or insult a woman. There were problems. They had the same right of ownership. They had the same right of inheritance. There were more women who were in elected positions and councils than any other country in the Middle East. It was number one in wealth, number one in longevity. People live longer in Libya. It was the Paris of Africa. Of 54 nations to be number one, that's saying something. They had no debt. They shared their wealth through common bank accounts that every citizen got some part of that, the free education, free health care. And you got $50,000 when you were married. Everybody had a home, and gas was 14 cents a gallon, and all these other wonderful things. And they had thousands of these democracy committees where people had a vote in everything, can actually override Gaddafi. None of that was told by the American media. They had to demonize him. So the only thing you saw was an axis of evil, and the New York Times, the CNN, Washington Post, everybody joined in. They did the same thing with Assad. And by the way, it later turned out he wasn't bombing his own citizens. Those were CIA black ops, where we trained a group of radical jihadists to go in and do the dirty work. And we succeeded. Today, it's a completely failed country with massive amounts of terrorists, including ISIS. One of its strongest bases is in his former home in a city in Libya. We've done the same thing with Syria and Assad. You couldn't have regime change in Honduras. You couldn't have attempted coups in Venezuela against Hugo Chavez. You couldn't have had Chile and Pinochet. You couldn't have had 67 countries be interfered with where they were anti-union and all people wanted a democracy and women's rights and peasant rights and land reform rights. All those were dealt with negatively by the major media. So why in the world, Dane, since we've had a complete total history of the media supporting the either the oligarchy or those in power, or the technocrats, or those corporations that have influence, why for the first time should they show any courage in covering a subject like geoengineering and weather patterns? Why should they be honest for the first time?
Certainly agree with everything you stated, and I definitely would not expect them to be honest at all. But what we intend to prove is that since they have been given credible, irrefutable data, in this case, on a known heavy metal contamination proven by dozens of lab tests, in this case, in this region alone, we've got them from around the globe, and not only the media, but the local public health testing agencies, our EPA, our environmental health testing agencies here in Northern California, we know that they know this contamination is there. I've personally been in meetings in environmental waste in Northern California, private closed-door meetings, and I will be in a position soon, hopefully legally, to name those names, shown tests from the Sacramento River, the drinking water source for Southern California and much of California, that were massive spikes of aluminum, and they have never released that data. Media has been given hard data from former government scientists. They have never disclosed that data. So I would argue, and our attorneys hopefully soon will argue, that makes these agencies, and even in some cases perhaps the media, accessories to crimes when they have helped to cover them up. Back to the Middle East, and to tie that, everything you described, to tie that into climate modification, which is weather warfare. Every single Middle Eastern country that's been destabilized and toppled, every single one, was subjected to, quote, once in a thousand year droughts. And we know this is climate modification. In fact, we have the leaders of some of these countries, like Iran, on the floor of the UN stating publicly, emphatically, that their country is being droughted out by NATO weather modification programs. This is weather warfare, period. So we have the same scenario happening over and over with every single country that Brzezinski, the Grand Chessboard, which I'm sure you're familiar with, stated would be a part of the overall plan that Wesley Clark stated right after 9/11. This plan was already in place to destabilize and topple all these countries, and climate modification was a part of every single one. It's been going on for decades. Same plan was carried out in sub-Saharan Africa and countries that have been and are still being droughted out with NATO weather modification programs. In regards to drought, although the environmental community, and I am an environmentalist to the gills, but I'm one who wants to face the biggest issues first and not ignore the biggest issues like, unfortunately, most of the environmentalist community is doing. They're ignoring climate engineering, and that's the epitome of hypocrisy. So when we hear the climate science community and the environmentalist community stating that these droughts are a result of climate change, and I'm not disputing the reality of climate change. The planet's in meltdown, countless causes, anthropogenic, all of them. But climate engineering at the top of that list, and in regard to the drought, because we know that the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture for every degree of warming sea. So it must rain more on a warming planet, but it's not. And atmospheric RH, relative humidity, is going down, not up. It's gone down steadily since the mid-1940s when these programs were kicked off, when the atmosphere was filled with desiccant materials, sun-blocking materials, which blocks evaporation, blocks convection, slows wind. So in the case of the droughts, for example, and the toppling of countries around the globe, destabilization, that's a direct result of climate engineering, period. The data is there to back that up. So the totality of how this weapon is being used is unimaginably hard to even comprehend, unimaginably hard. And it's so much an aspect of the current reality that we all live in that people don't even know what a real climate scenario would be at this point, because the entire system is completely tainted.
Well, today, when I was waiting to film someone, they had a radio on, and the radio was with Rush Limbaugh, and Rush Limbaugh was saying that there is no such thing as man-made climate change. The planet's actually not been warmer once in the last 16 years, that whatever climate change there is due to natural, not man-made factors. And you think, fine, he wants those opinions, they're just his opinions, that's fine. What does it mean for those people listening to him who refuse to challenge him and therefore will begin to believe that their actions have no consequence upon the environment, that no corporation, none of the coal-burning power plants, none of the major factories, and what they release in the atmosphere is causing a problem? So on the one hand, if people are not even willing to acknowledge climate change is real, man-made climate change is real, then automatically you exclude human beings from the solution. And then you say, well, it's just a process we're going through. But it's not. And he says, oh, there's not a scientist. There's over 2,000 scientists who agree that climate change is real and we, human beings, are responsible for it. We've accelerated it through the Industrial Revolution. And yet you have people seemingly who have large audiences. Not only are those people giving wrong information, but the audiences are believing it and not questioning it. So I want you, Dane, to take us through the creation of drought, such as what we're witnessing in California and in 17 other states in the United States, including Oklahoma and Colorado and Kansas and most of Texas, in Nevada, New Mexico, South Dakota, Utah, and Georgia, and much of Florida. And now there's evidence it is contributing in many ways to much of the effects of climate change and warming of the earth. And there are quite a, and this is due to geoengineering, and there are quite a few issues that I'd like for you to go through. Here are the issues I want you to touch on. Recent years, we've had all this drought and big-time losses of wheat crops in Russia and California, the changing the course of the jet streams and the Gulf Stream in the Atlantic Ocean, which means that, quite simply, and I had Dr. James Hansen discussing this today, that when we have enormous amount of melting of cold water, fresh water in Greenland, and that's going into the water, and you have a different molecular weight and a different temperature, the deeper water, you can slow down that conveyor belt, the conveyor belt that takes warm water from the equator up around Greenland and bring it back down again. If that shuts down, which it can, then you're looking at enormous crisis in water or in temperature all over Europe. And that is highly probable. You're also looking at the first time ever, the possibility of a Category 6 hurricane. You're looking at, for example, yesterday or the day before, Phoenix had one of its huge dust and sand storms, which are now common. In fact, in the last 7 weeks, we have had six once-in-500-year remarkable weather patterns in the United States, like in Louisiana, for example. And now that's the new norm. And we're completely unprepared for this. We've also seen, you mentioned it briefly, but we've seen the massive die-off of sea life in our oceans, increasing the melting of the Arctic, and also get into HAARP and the project in Alaska. And there's new concern about new ozone layer holes, which earlier we patted ourselves in the back for solving, yet geoengineering could be destroying the ozone layer. And finally, the rapid destruction of our forests and certain tree species in particular, and I'm thinking the live oak in California and the ash and sugar maples in New England.
Let me go back. I'll start at the top of that list. And if we look at the climate denial, Rush Limbaugh, and those that choose to listen to people like Rush Limbaugh without doing any research so that they don't know, we've just passed the 371st consecutive month of above normal global temperatures. We're 14 or 15 consecutive months, depending on the study you look at, of all-time record months. I know you know this, Gary, and your listeners hopefully do or will now. July was the warmest month ever recorded on the planet since record-keeping began. It was the 14th or 15th in a row of such months. So when people like Rush say what they say, it flies so in the face of reality, it's mind-numbing. And interestingly enough, there's quite a segment of people who don't believe that human activity has harmed the planet at all, and that's very perplexing that they would think that. But those same groups do believe that climate engineering is going on and that climate engineering is, in fact, perhaps warming the planet. And we're trying to get those groups to understand that any form of human activity that alters the Earth's energy balance is a form of geoengineering because it's altering the natural system. So we're trying to bring people to the table and make them understand that this is a complex issue, as you correctly stated earlier. In regard to the IPCC, largest scientific panel on any subject ever in human history, but unlike what many people like Rush Limbaugh think, that their data is wrong, and I would argue their data is wrong, but wrong in the opposite direction of what people like Rush Limbaugh choose to think. The worst case scenario from the IPCC is far, far short of how bad and immediate our situation is. Why? Because the IPCC has no climate feedback loops plugged into their modeling. None. And it appears there may be 50 to 60 climate feedback loops in swing right now. So their modeling is horribly flawed, horribly behind the curve, and horribly conservative from how bad it really is. And on top of that, everywhere we check temperature readings, Gary, we're seeing about a 4 to 5 degree underreporting commonly, which means it's far, far hotter than what we're being told. In fact, I would argue that based on the data we have, it looks like we're past 3.5 degrees C right now. We're past the baseline at which human beings have existed on this planet right now. And that is something that power structure is trying desperately to hide. As far as the climate engineering fueling the droughts, fueling fires, fueling the warming, there is no arguing that point. Greatest single causal factor of all, climate engineering. How does it cause forest fires? Bioavailable aluminum is poisoning the root systems. We know that. It's so much aluminum, it's changing soil pHs. In the Pacific Northwest, we have measured with USDA scientists that I know, measuring in the field, 10 to 12 times escalation in alkalinity in the soils. So that's how much aluminum is raining down on us. So it's killing the root systems. It's destroying the ozone layer. And again, the CFCs on which the ozone destruction was blamed, I would argue, is a red herring. Yes, they're harmful, but mathematically speaking, they're a drop in an ocean compared to the damage that climate engineering has done. And there, the ozone layer is not recovering, unlike what people want to believe. We're measuring UV with our own meters, and we're seeing UVB, for example, 1,000 to 1,100% higher than we're being told, 10 to 11 times higher. We're also picking up UVC on the surface. UVC is the last band of UV before X-ray, so the ozone layer is in unimaginably dire condition right now. Jet stream alteration. We know with the ionosphere heaters, HARP, for your listeners, that High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, very deceiving acronym or abbreviation for their facility, which is an ionosphere heater. And we have dozens of those ground-based facilities around the globe. We have SBX radar, sea-based X-band radar. We have also, Gary, the NEXRAD radar systems that we know are affecting the climate because we can see their effect on precipitation maps. And these are what people mistake as just cell phone towers. And we know there's about 10 times more power being pumped into those towers than they need for cell phone repeating. And again, we know they're having an effect on precipitation because we can see it. So the amount of radio frequency we're being exposed to is unimaginable. The Greenland melt. Yes, massive amounts of fresh water pouring off, so much so. There's so much weight being lifted off the Greenland landmass because of the melting water that Greenland is undergoing what's called glacial rebound. Greenland is popping up out of the sea because of the amount of ice that's melting. Could shut down the Atlantic conveyor, but the notion, I believe the data indicates that the sort of Younger Dryas scenario when it shut down the conveyor and triggered the kind of massive cooling we saw in previous events, there's simply too much inertia behind the warming right now, too much methane buildup, massive methane hydrate deposits releasing around the globe, especially in the Laptev Sea of the Arctic, hurricane suppression. We know they're suppressing hurricanes, and your listeners, I hope, will wonder about the fact that we've had an 11-year major hurricane impact to the U.S. drought. No major hurricane impacts for 11 years while the rest of the planet is being pummeled by record hurricanes. Why is that? Because they're suppressing those hurricanes to the detriment of the climate system as a whole, and we can see them suppressing those hurricanes on radar. They're aerosolizing, cutting down the convection. We have patented hurricane suppression materials like Dynamat. So again, there's no question that they're doing this. We have record warm temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico, and yet nothing churns there. They don't want the oil at the bottom of the Gulf churned up, for one. And the fact that they're suppressing Atlantic hurricanes really can't be argued at this point. We are heading for Canfield Ocean, which you alluded to. The ocean is deoxygenating, superheating, and stratifying. It's not mixing, and the suppression of the hurricanes is part of that problem, although there's countless other problems on top. And again, the tree die-off, one of the last questions you asked, right now, statistically, we've lost about 3.4 trillion trees since the dawn of civilization. That's about 55% of Earth's trees are now gone, dead, done. And the remaining trees are horribly sick and dying. I do tree surveys myself. I've been to Yosemite earlier this year. It's cataclysmic. The trees are dead as far as you can see. So the boreal forests now, the second largest source of oxygen on the planet, are now not only not acting as a carbon sink, they're acting as a carbon source because we have the trees dying. And back to the fires that I started with, bioavailable aluminum poisoning the root systems. We have the drought-causing effects of geoengineering affecting the hydrological cycle, cutting off the moisture. We have more dry lightning because, again, the moisture is being dried up with the particulates, and we have more particulates in the atmosphere that are electrically conductive, so we have more lightning. It's dry lightning. Ozone destruction is cooking the trees from the top. And we have an incendiary dust. These metals are incendiaries. They're coating the foliage, and once the fires start, they burn like never before. You've heard that, I'm sure, recently with the Blue Cut fire that just happened. All of this is directly related to geoengineering.
When you look back at previous White House administrations, which contributed most of the advancement of geoengineering, and since Hillary Clinton is still positioned to be the favored next president, where do you see her standing on the issue of weather modification, either for climate change reduction or as a weapon?
I see business as usual, and I don't have a lot of faith in either candidate. I can't imagine we have such a poor choice, but I'm especially concerned about when I see mainstream media, and I watch a lot of mainstream media just to see what they're putting out, in the case of CNN, for example, so incredibly biased toward Hillary Clinton, that's alarming to me. And again, I'm not a Trump fan either at all, but I'm saying that it appears she is the business-as-usual candidate, and the military-industrial complex, by all available data that we have seen, will remain the cancer that it is until it collapses or until the public wakes up, including our brothers and sisters in the military who we desperately need to wake up and realize what they're being used for, like the doctor you described earlier, that unless we get that critical wake-up and our military members stop participating in the insanity, and it's up to the population to help cause that wake-up, right, then I would argue, mathematically speaking, we're very close to a complete collapse, in that we're facing mathematically right now, based on all the frontline data, if we stay on this course, we're facing total global extinction in the geologic blink of an eye.
Which would be the next 50 to 100 years. But no. Guy McPherson believes it could be the next 14 years.
I would argue, I have very big differences with Guy. I've met Guy. I've met him face to face, and some alarming aspects of those meetings where his adamant denial of climate engineering was so emphatic that it was as if he'd been threatened or something. But as far as the rest of Guy's data and the severity of the situation, on those points, I would agree with the severity of his assessment, and he's not the only one. I'm working with a NASA retired aeronautical engineer right now. He's helping us with our UV data. The ozone destruction alone is so severe now that, by his calculations, if we stay on this course and the destruction continues, no complex organisms would survive with exposure to that UV in a decade.
10 years.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Short answers. We only have 4 minutes. Most of the conspiracy-focused broadcasts and podcasts and satellite TV programs emphasize the U.S. as the primary culprit in geoengineering. And the U.S. military is on record stating that it intended to own the weather by 2025, just 9 years from now. And it is true that we first weaponized the weather. Wasn't it first used during the Vietnam War in either Cambodia or Laos to force the monsoon seasons earlier in order to halt the Viet Cong's advance into South Vietnam? And so it's been with us a long time. But then I recall seeing that a former FBI chief, Ted Gunderson, blamed the UN for the increase in chemtrails and associating it with the murder and genocide issue. How much is the U.S. to be blamed for this geoengineering, aside from it contracting foreign nations and airlines and private corporations to be spraying on our behalf?
We know the U.S. is the largest weapons manufacturer and dealer in the world, yes? And I would argue the same is true with climate engineering. The U.S. is the one that has pushed the envelope this far. They're the ones that have caused it to be this severe. But that being said, China, Russia, also certainly involved with this. Just like an arms race, it's also a race to control the climate at the cost of killing the entire planet. So the U.S. is forcing this issue to much higher levels, but other major powers absolutely involved.
Okay. Instead of the typical white trail that some often confuse with condensation trails, these new dark smoky black in color trails, frequently a second jet or airline will lay down a white trailer over the black one. My understanding is that this to be relatively recent, perhaps only starting this year. What can you tell us about this phenomena of the black chemtrails?
What we have seen so far in photographic evidence with analyzation indicates that this is, in fact, a shadow being cast out in front of an aircraft that looks like a black line, but because it's reflecting off a lower layer of aerosols, it's a very complex refraction depending on the angle of the sun, because the angle of the black line in front of an aircraft that's spraying behind it is perfectly aligned with what some perceive as the second aircraft. So again, if you picture a layer of aerosols below the aircraft, which is reflecting in a manner that reflects that shadow further up than it would otherwise be, That's what our photographic evidence indicates so far. Doesn't mean that we know they're not spraying other elements at certain times, but the bottom line is, in both cases, whatever the color, we should see, with very few exceptions, nothing coming out of the back of a commercial carrier jet engine because it's a high-bypass turbofan, same with a military tanker. We should almost never, with very few exceptions, see anything.
Final question. You have 60 seconds. Based upon all that we know from James Hansen, who, by the way, said that all of climate change science has been very conservative, and that there is no way to compare a mathematical model, a computer model, with what really happens with feedback loops and chaos theory in the real world. And we're seeing that now. That's why nobody in Louisiana who had ever been flooded the way they have now, they weren't prepared. And we're also seeing fires that historically you would see coming. You'd have an opportunity of a day or two or three to get out of the way. Now it's a matter of hours. And so taking all this into account, including the impact that these geoengineering research projects are having, give us your estimate as to when do you think that, since society never just breaks down all at once, where you'll start to see some major changes happening that nobody can deny. It'll be right in our face.
It's already happening. We may have a blue ocean event by September, which means the Arctic ice breaks up by September. That may happen. If it doesn't happen this year, it'll happen next year, and very quickly. Although I agree with Hansen's assessment completely that the comet assessments have been radically conservative, with Hansen or anyone else, you can't have a legitimate discussion about the climate and climate change without first and foremost including climate engineering, and none of them are. So let's hope they do.
I agree, and I thank you for the good work that you and your team are doing. Dane Wigington, Wigington. The website is out there for people to get up to date on all the latest research that he is doing and keeping all of us informed, because no one's touching it the way it should be touched. Give us your website one more time, Dane.
Geoengineeringwatch.org, non-political. We don't sell anything, simply a data repository.
And what's important is I believe that there's provocateurs. I believe that the different national intelligence agencies have intentionally put some people on the air, up on podcasts, written articles, to kind of make everyone in the field look stupid and cartoonish, as if all don't believe those people. They're just a bunch of clowns with no science background muttering all night on some radio station. But there are legitimate scientists. Dane Wigington is one of them. He is a geoengineer scientist, and he has an awful lot of other scientists who will corroborate the power of geoengineering. Thank you very much, Dane.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Knoll. This has been the Progressive Commentary Hour, Conversations with Remarkable Minds. Have a nice day.